I don't think I ever want to live a life, live a day low carb ever again. I mean, doesn't it screw up all your hormones and like your sleep? And then it's just like a whole trickling effect, right?
No more hives. Check out this review on Histamine Immune from Heart and Soil Supplements. Leah says, I used to get hives on my stomach and around my belly button after I eat. Sometimes it would be on my arms as well. After taking Histamine and Immune for 2 weeks, I no longer have these hives. I'm super thrilled. For the longest time, I've been trying to figure out what's causing them. I've experienced so much improvement since taking Heart and Soil's Histamine and Immune. I didn't realize how much my hair has thinned over the years also, and my hair is growing back like crazy now. The amount of baby hairs along my hairline is amazing. I've clearly been nutrient deprived for a while. Thank you to Dr. Saladino and for Heart and Soil for all of the hard work and the amazing supplements. I am traveling right now, guys, and Histamine and Immune is the supplement that I travel with. I'm so excited about the research that's been done on thymus, one of the organs in Histamine and Immune, and the peptide in thymus named thymodulin, which is clearly shown to reduce respiratory tract infections in kids. As you can hear from Leah's review, it also can help with allergic symptoms, seasonal allergies, eczema, all that kind of stuff. And so check out some Histamine and Immune from Heart and Soil Supplements. All of our supplements are grass-fed, grass-finished, regeneratively raised animals in a gelatin capsule packaged in glass, the finest desiccated organ supplements on the planet. You can find us at heartandsoil.co. That's .co. And our mission is to help you reclaim your birthright to optimal health. On this week's podcast, I'm super excited to share my conversation with Taylor Rapp, the starting safety for the Los Angeles Rams. Taylor's in free agency right now, so he might be moving to another team soon, but I got to hang out with him in Los Angeles, California when I was there and talk to him about how he trains as a professional athlete, how he lifts, how he eats. Taylor does an animal-based diet. He gets the majority of his carbohydrates from things like fruit and honey. He might throw in a little rice or sweet potato in there, but he's definitely found benefits to his professional level football game by including more meat, organs, either fresh or desiccated, like Heart and Soil supplements in his diet, and benefits to his recovery, benefits to his resilience from injuries, benefits to the level of his playing on the field. So it's really cool to see professional athletes like Taylor begin to think about their diets at a granular level and benefit from this. And Taylor's just an awesome guy. I got to hang out with him. I did a food haul with him at Whole Foods in Los Angeles. We'll post all the content from Reels that we did, but this is my longer form conversation with Taylor Rapp, professional football player, about how he eats and trains to optimize his performance. And you don't have to be a professional athlete to benefit from this conversation. I think anyone who wants to optimize can learn from what people at the highest level of the game are doing. You don't have to eat as many carbohydrates as Taylor. You don't have to eat as many carbohydrates as me. I think you can scale your carbohydrates based on your activity level. We get into that in this podcast, but I think that making the majority of your diet animal foods, whether it's meat, organs, raw cheeses, raw milk, honey, and using carbohydrate sources that are not as problematic for humans, including getting rid of grains, which so many people use as carbohydrates, will improve your overall performance no matter what you do in your life. If I had to include one grain in my diet, it would probably be white rice. But I think a lot of people even have issues with white rice. So increasingly, as I evolve in my own work, it's about understanding what is right for every individual. Everyone's a little different. And many individuals who have underlying autoimmune issues, whether it's skin issues or depression or sleep or GI issues, will benefit from intentional dietary choices that are sometimes a little bit outside of the mainstream recommendations. As you heard on the podcast with Sally Norton, sweet potatoes, oxalate-containing foods aren't great for everyone. So find what works for you, and I hope that my work will continue to make you curious. Enjoy this conversation with Taylor Rapp. I want to give a shout out to my sponsors of the podcast. I appreciate them all. They make this podcast free at no charge, and they're all products that I curate carefully and use in my own life. I want to start with Bond Charge. You can find them at Bond Charge, B-O-N-C-H-A-R-G-E.com, and use the code CarnivoreMD to save 15% off. As I am recording this podcast intro on the road, I'm using an EMF blocking mat beneath my computer. I was at the Heart and Soil headquarters yesterday in Texas here, and I saw a couple of people working with their laptops right on their laps. And I said, we're going to get you some EMF blocking mats from Bond Charge, because if you are using a laptop on your lap, you do not want that EMF. We don't fully understand what non-native EMF does to humans, and this is a little dangerous. I never put my laptop on my lap when I'm traveling on planes. I always bring this EMF protecting mat. It's one of my favorite things that Bond Charge makes. They also do EMF reducing earbuds, which I'm actually using as I record this podcast on my computer. I'm not a fan of AirPods. I see them more and more, and I just think you're really putting a significant amount of non-native EMF into your brain through the Bluetooth, and we don't know what that does long-term. So think about this stuff, guys. Bondcharge also makes blue light blocking glasses. They're a pretty awesome company. Find them at bondcharge.com. I use a number of their products, as you can tell. Next, oh my goodness, Schwenk Grills. I love these guys. If you guys have heard my story or seen any of my reels in Costa Rica, you know that I brought a Schwenk 1500 degree grill to Costa Rica because I love this thing so much. They're now offering natural gas models, and they are a revolutionary portable infrared gas grill that heats up to 1500 degrees Fahrenheit. It delivers premium steakhouse quality taste. It's the best grill I've ever used, and I love it. Like I said, I packaged it. I brought it to Costa Rica. I have the only Schwenk grill in Costa Rica, and everyone that comes to my house is jealous when I make them steaks. So many of my friends have gotten them, and they love them. They're heating technology has been used by the world's best steakhouses since the 1980s, and now everyone can have it. But it's not just for steak. You can cook anything in it. Chicken, seafood, vegetables. I don't know why you do that. You can cook pizza with a pizza stone, but I'm not a fan of pizza. You guys know this. Lobster tails are done in less than 5 minutes, salmon in 4 minutes, pizza in less than five, and steak is ready in as little as 3 minutes, depending on the thickness and desired doneness. It's amazing. So check them out at schwankgrills.com. The spelling is a little weird. Listen for this. schwankgrills.com. Use the promo code Paul150, Paul150 at checkout to get $150 off. That's schwankgrills.com. schwankgrills.com. The promo code is Paul150. You guys will not be disappointed. I'm very confident this will be one of your favorite things around the house and the best grill you've ever used. Next, I want to give a shout out to Eight Sleep, E-I-G-H-T, sleep.com. You can use the code CarnivoreMD for $150 off the 8 Sleep Pod Pro cover. Sleep is so important. Next to the importance of diet, it's hard to overemphasize the importance of good sleep. And the Pod Pro cover is amazing because it allows you to control the temperature of your mattress. As you're sleeping, your body needs to cool to fall asleep. And using the Pod Pro cover, which fits on any mattress, allows you to adjust the temperature of your sleeping environment, providing the optimal temperature that helps you fall asleep quickly. And you can sleep as cold as 55 or as hot as 110. I don't know why you want to go to 110, but it also does biometrics and sleep stages. It's like AI in your bed. So check them out. Better sleep is the health habit you will love sticking to night after night. Wake up fully energized with a pod so you can do whatever you want in your life. Go to 8sleep.com/carnivoreMD to save $150 on the 8 Sleep Pod Pro cover. Last but not least, you can go to drpaulsalt.com to get your free bag of Kalima sea salt, which is an ocean-borne, microplastic-free type of sea salt. I love these guys. I love what they're doing. Every year, humans dump 8 million tons of garbage into the ocean. It's such a bummer because that's where our table salt comes from. The garbage breaks down into tiny pieces called microplastics, and salt from the ocean crystallizes around these microplastics, forming the core of most salt crystals, which means that when you sprinkle your salt on steak, vegetables, I don't know why you'd be eating vegetables, but you get it, French fries, the most addictive food in the world. If you've seen my Instagram, you're eating little pieces of plastic bags, water bottles, and other garbage. We don't really know what happens to the human body when it's exposed to these. A new study reveals 90% of all salt tested has microplastics. They are free of ocean-borne microplastics. It's delicious. It's a great finishing salt, super crunchy. And check this out. It's hand-harvested from the Kalima salt flats in Mexico. So you're supporting local economies and the salineros in Mexico by purchasing this 100% all-natural, unrefined sea salt. So I really love what they do. I'm always happy when I'm in the United States, so I can grab some extra bags of Kalima and bring them back to Costa Rica. Go to drpaulsalt.com to get your free bag. Okay, that's it, guys. On to the podcast. Appreciate and love you all. All right, guys, welcome to the podcast this week. I'm super stoked, grateful, and honored to be here with safety of the Super Bowl champions from 2022, LA Rams, Taylor Rapp. Thanks for coming on the podcast, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're hanging out in Malibu in Los Angeles. We got our raw milk in front of us because we had this empty table here, so we wanted to fill it with something that was
looks good,
consistent. We got some raw milk. We might drink it, or it's just going to sit there like raw milk.
I'm drinking it. You don't drink yours, I'll drink it.
Yeah, you can get my raw milk. But I'm excited to talk to you because I haven't had a chance to hang out or talk with many professional athletes. And I think that mostly what I think about and talk about is with doctors.
Right.
Right? People who are in the medical space. Mm-hmm. And I think about diet and how it affects illness. Yeah. But I think the other side of that is how diet affects performance.
Yeah.
And longevity in athletics and resilience in athletics. And so it's cool to have you because I know you've got some pretty interesting stories about your career in football.
Yeah.
So take us through it. I mean, before the podcast, you were just telling me about the time that you went off red meat and you were fasting. You said you've tried keto in the past. I mean, walk us through a little bit of your arc of like your football career and your different ways that you've eaten. I mean, you can start wherever you want and we'll go from there.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like you said, like I think I've been on, you know, full spectrum of every single diet, you know, paleo, keto, low carb. I haven't fully gone carnivore at all while I was playing. But yeah, I think interesting story, actually. So it was my second year in the NFL. I was with the Rams. And, I for whatever reason, I think I had some teammates telling me that, you know, their experiences going off of red meat, not eating red meat, which was that worst idea ever to stop eating red meat. I think they told me, you know, oh, my energy levels have been great. And like, I feel so great. Like, you know, I don't feel so, for whatever reason, they felt like they were like slow or whatever, or like they felt weighed down. Like sometimes when they ate a lot of red meat, whatever, for whatever reason. And on top of that, actually, I wanted to experiment with intermittent fasting. And so that's a deadly combo right there. I was intermittent fasting for sometimes like 20, 22 hours, sometimes even 24 hours and just one meal a day as an athlete, right? And on top of that, not eating red meat. And so that was my second year, you know, just kind of my main protein is probably like protein shakes and chicken breasts and fish. That was a complete disaster, you know. Fast forward to training camp, getting ready for the season. I was actually literally after a workout, like literally just stretching like this, like, you know, just trying to open up my right hip. And I like cranked down on it and popped my knee, my LCL, the outside of my knee, sprained the LCL. So I was out for whatever, 3 weeks. Ended up losing my starting job because of that injury. You know, it's a business, you know, that's for another podcast to talk about, but ended up losing my starting job. The starter, the guy that came in for me, he ended up actually getting injured as well. So I was able to come back and play. Ended up playing a few games, ended up tearing my left labrum, my shoulder. I played through that for the rest, for a couple more games. Hurt my other knee, my MCL, sprained my MCL in my other knee. And so that kind of like put me out for the rest of the season. We decided I was going to get my shoulder fixed anyways. And so we decided just kind of call it for the season, get the shoulder fixed, kind of get all healthy. And so, I don't think it was a coincidence that all those injuries happened literally when I tried to make those two changes. And going back to my history of my whole playing career, I've never had like a major injury in my whole playing career. And I ate red meat. You know, my dad kind of put my brother and I on red meat steaks, you know, as a kid, like growing up and, you know, working out, getting us into. And so I've always eaten red meat and steaks all the time growing up and, you know, never had a major injury, never had a major surgery, or anything like that. And, you know, just what a coincidence that second year when I decided to cut out red meat and you know, start fasting that I had those crazy injuries.
Did you feel less energy or how was your energy when you were doing that? Because I imagine you weren't getting many calories.
Yeah, no, I actually that was probably like the lowest weight of my playing career as well. And so like that affected my play too, because I feel like I wasn't as strong. I wasn't as durable out there on the football. Football is like very physical sport.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where it's like car crashes every single play. And so for me to be at my lowest playing weight, not strong, like, you know, I definitely, that was probably the weakest I've been that second year of my whole playing career.
How much do you think you weighed then?
Probably, I think 197.
And what are you now? Or what do you play at?
Like 205.
Okay.
So easily, yeah, 8 to 10 pounds.
Uh-huh. Of probably muscle.
Of muscle. A lot more muscle.
Yes. 8 to 10 pounds of muscle lost.
And probably less fat, honestly. Like uh-huh. I'm actually leaner right now.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Than I was back then. My body fat percentage is a lot less than it was then.
So you have at least 8 to 10 pounds more yeah. muscle and less fat now.
Yes. Exactly.
Then when you were fasting,
right,
20 to 24 hours a day and not eating red meat.
Exactly. Isn't that crazy? Like I'm trying to get better at too. Like sometimes I find like myself like underfeeling myself and like not eating enough for like how much we're doing and how many calories I'm burning throughout the day. And like, I feel like I'm not eating as much as I should, like getting the calories in as much as I should. And like, I'm trying to challenge myself to push myself to eat more calories, to get more protein in throughout the day. Cause I think, and sometimes like when I have made that change, like actually feel leaner, I feel better. And like, I feel like I actually am not like gaining weight. I think the body is like so smart in like the way it, you know, handles things. And like, it's, I don't know. It's crazy. You probably know a lot more than me.
Well, I can second your experience based on what I've observed for myself and the people that I've worked with in medicine and what I've heard from people on social media and interacting with people. Calories are not linear.
No.
It's just not linear. No. And I think that people forget that somewhere in the middle of the calorie equation is this crazy variable called the thyroid gland, which determines your entire metabolism.
Yeah.
And if your organism is running hotter, you're just burning more calories.
Right.
And there's gotta be, I know there are nutrient sensors in the human body, in the brain, in the human body, that put the brakes on the thyroid or allow the thyroid to really ramp it up.
Yeah.
And people always wanna say, calories in, calories out. If you eat more, you're gonna gain weight.
Right.
Well, it's like, yes, there is such thing as conservation of mass and energy, and there is a second law of thermodynamics, but what people don't understand is that, and this applies to, I think, almost everyone listening to this podcast. And that's the thing I want to say at the beginning of this podcast, is this is not a podcast just for professional athletes or people who aspire to be professional athletes, because I think you guys as professional athletes are the specimens that give us a sense of how it can be for everyone.
Yeah.
But I think that when anyone eats more food, if that food is of higher quality, your metabolism will go up.
Yeah.
And your body will burn more of that food. And so some people, I think, have underlying metabolic dysfunction. And if you're frankly diabetic or pre-diabetic, this may not work as well for those people. And that's probably a separate conversation. But, I mean, the three of us sitting in the room, we got a buddy over there working the cameras. You know, like for us, and I've experienced the same thing, and I know that Jimmy has, the camera guy, like, I basically can't eat, if I can eat almost as much raw milk, honey, maple syrup, raw cream.
You can't overeat.
I cannot overeat it.
No.
Like, I will hit a satiety point where I don't want it anymore. Mm. But if my body wants me to have those foods, like, I almost, the more I eat, the better I feel.
Right.
There's a difference. If I eat 2,500 calories or I eat 3,500 calories, like, I'm going to feel better on 3,500 calories, recover better from my workouts, from surfing, whatever. And that's 1,000 calories a day. According to mainstream medicine, I should be gaining weight like crazy. You know, I should be gaining at least a pound plus.
Right.
You know, they say a pound of fat is 3,500 calories, whatever. I should be gaining 2 pounds of fat a week. And I don't gain anything. I just feel better and I recover better.
Yeah. And I like, just going off of that, like sometimes like, I don't track like my calories like crazy or anything like that. But like, you know, I'm kind of in the ballpark of like, okay, like this week, you know, each day I'll probably eat like 2,000 calories. But like back then when I was eating 2,000 calories a day compared to now where I'm eating 3,000, 3,500, like, I'm a lot more leaner now and I haven't gained any weight back in, and I'm eating 1500 more calories than I was each day than I was back then.
So what's
like,
going on?
What's going on? Exactly. There has to be something there. So it's like, I think the body is just so freaking amazing. Like, and I don't know what's going on, but I know something's going on. Right.
And I've heard of other professional sports players and NFL players doing this also, where they try and eat like 7,000 calories a day. They'll try and eat as much as they can just to really, really push their metabolism high.
Yeah.
So they're just cranking and they have energy and their body temperature is high and probably more recovery. And you're giving your body, with more calories comes more nutrients. I think that what you probably ran into with no red meat and fasting was a caloric deficit, which is going to affect your hormones, but also nutrient deficits in terms of absolute amounts of protein, digestibility of the protein, and then everything falls apart. I've never understood. So let's go back to the guys on your team.
Yeah.
Those guys that said that they were not eating red meat.
Yeah.
Do they still not eat red meat? Are they still on the team?
Honestly, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of specimens around my business.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you've heard like little tidbits probably of like, you know, guys eating, you know, diets of candy
yes.
and stuff like that. And just like just a physical specimen, but like, how long is that going to last? And like, when's it actually going to catch up to them? And like, I don't know. And that's another question too. Like, I want to ask you, like, how's that even possible? Like, I know there's a lot more other things going on. Like, do they just metabolize certain things better than other people do? Or like, what's going on?
I mean, I can only speculate that there's an interesting thing that happens in humans where, you know, basically from birth, we begin to accumulate nutrients and we also begin to accumulate some things that I believe are toxic for humans. Mm-hmm. And one of those things that we accumulate that's toxic for humans is seed oils.
Yeah.
You know, these polyunsaturated fatty acids like linoleic acid. Mm-hmm. And we were just in the grocery store the other day looking at infant formula. And the number one selling brand of infant formula in the United States, the second ingredient is soybean oil or canola oil. So I think, you know, and then even if a baby is not fed infant formula, if the mother is eating excess seed oils in her diet, right, it gets passed into the breast milk. Right. And the composition of breast milk changes based on what the mother's eating. And if the mother's eating more linoleic acid from seed oils, whether it's corn, canola, safflower, sunflower, whatever, soybean, there's more in the breast milk. And this is actually crazy because if you look at the breast milk, I'm going on a tangent here, but I'll bring it back. If you look at the breast milk of hunter-gatherers,
yeah,
it has much lower amounts of linoleic acid than the breast milk of westernized women who are breastfeeding.
Right.
And that's because hunter-gatherers don't get any significant amount of linoleic acid, yeah, in their diet. Probably less than 2% of their calories, mm-hmm, are linoleic acid, whereas maybe 15-20% of our calories as westernized humans come from linoleic acid with all the foods we eat. And so that gets passed to babies. And so they look at the breast milk of westernized mothers and they say, breast milk contains 10 to 15% linoleic acid. But if they looked at the breast milk of hunter-gatherers, it would be 2 to 3% right, linoleic. So they make the infant formula a mirror of the breast milk of westernized mothers who are eating tons of linoleic acid. This is all to say that from an early age, I think things like that can accumulate in our bodies. And it's kind of like a clock, right? It's like a time bomb. I think that so many of the guys that you play with, my suspicion is that, and the NBA and, yeah, Major League Baseball, these are the best of the best genetically, mm-hmm, and their cell membranes are filling up, right, with linoleic acid, and they're becoming more and more nutrient deficient. And eventually, depending on the player, they hit the wall.
Yeah.
But they might not hit the wall until they're 28,
yeah,
you know, and they've had 6 years of good years in the NFL, right, or they had, you know, maybe they hit the wall at 27, but not a lot of them make it into their 30s as far as I can tell. I mean, you think like, what's the longevity?
Right.
And I mean, you look at the NBA right now, LeBron's got a lot of longevity. That's, yeah, pretty cool. But I think that football is probably the most demanding sport of any of them. So, yeah, look at the longevity of football players, aside from CTE, like the concussions and the brain injuries. The guys in there should really be paying attention to their nutrition. And I think that they would get much more longevity out of their careers. Oh, yeah. I don't think they understand this, but I guess when you're in the NFL and you're doing well, it's all going good until it's not.
Right, exactly. And I think their whole entire lives, they've kind of like just been able to wing it and eat whatever and perform at the highest level. So it's definitely interesting, but yeah, that's weird.
Do you guys get any nutritional counseling?
Yeah, I mean, we have like a dietitian, nutritionist.
Okay. That's their credential, like a dietitian, nutritionist? Not a, yeah, doc, not a doctor?
No, 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 no. Definitely not doctor.
Well, doctors aren't trained in nutrition anyway, so nobody's trained in nutrition.
Yeah.
So what is a dietitian, nutritionist? What are they telling you?
Just some guidance. I mean, it's, you know, I give them a lot of grace because it's difficult to tell, you know, like a 25-year-old, 30-year-old, old, like, grown man that makes probably 50 times what you make as a dietitian.
Yeah.
Like tell them what to do. And like, you know, so it's a weird dynamic, you know?
Yeah.
And so I give them a lot of grace because I think, you know, those guys are in a tough position to try to, you know, tell you what to do and stuff like that. But I think mostly it's just like, just to provide a little guidance on, you know, mostly just like hydration, game day fueling,
okay,
and stuff like that. But like,
they're not telling you about, do they talk to you about how much protein to eat?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
What's their recommendation?
1 gram per
pound of body weight.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. That's more than like, that's at least more than the general public.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then do they tell you where to get it from, plant versus animal sources, or do they?
Yeah. So our nutrition actually, he recommends animal sources.
That's great.
Yes.
Okay. Does he?
He does. We do have some plant protein though in the weight room.
Yeah.
Protein powder and stuff like that. But I think he's also catering to certain players that I don't know. I've heard some stories too that they're some of the players, like the significant others, are trying to sway them, you know, in a different direction.
Interesting.
And so yeah, it's interesting, but yeah, I know it's a whole nother world.
Okay. Right? And did the nutritionist or the dietitian say anything about red meat or meat, or did they're just like, just eat meat, whatever kind of meat it is, just eat that?
Yeah, I mean, because going back, I mean, it's hard to tell him, you know. I think he does. I've had conversations with him. I know he does know that red meat is the you know, the best protein.
Probably,
that's definitely superior compared to other animal proteins. But again, he's in a difficult position to say, hey, you should be eating red meat. You should be doing this. Like, so I think he, you know, give and takes, he wins, picks his battles and stuff. And
yeah.
So if as long as the player and the athlete is trying to get in the animal protein and trying to hit the daily protein, I think he's happy.
That's good. Do they say anything about fat? Source of fats?
No, not so much. No, I mean, it's more so like, I think nowadays, like, you know, the healthy fats, like olive oil.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, it's not
better
horrible.
Better than seed oils.
Better than seed oils. They definitely don't recommend seed oils.
They don't. Like,
when I walk in the cafe, I rarely eat at the facility. And I bring my own stuff in, like Tupperware.
Oh, you do?
Stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
But like,
they allow that.
I mean, yeah. We're grown men. Like, yeah,
okay.
they're not going to tell us what to do. But, you know, I'm not going to walk into the cafeteria and tell them, you know, hey, like, you know, all the cooking spray and stuff like that when they're cooking eggs and scrambles and stuff. You know, I bring in my own stuff.
Wow, but that's really cool that you're that conscientious to bring your own food.
Yeah, no, I think.
Do any other players do that?
There's a few players, like the rich of the rich, that like have their private chefs and stuff, and they bring in their own meals. But like, I don't know how high quality those are.
Right.
To be
in interesting. Okay. But they're not bringing in like their own Tupperwares. Like you're doing something that's really intentional and takes work.
Yeah. Dude, like I think like
that's awesome.
I'm the type of person too. Like I think when I like go a certain route or like I go down a rabbit hole, like I'm going all the way in. Like
that's,
I'm going all the way in. I'm dedicating it all. Like, you know, I'm not gonna half-ass it or like I'm not going halfway down. You know, I think. You know, I got to go all in, especially with like my past in longevity and health and availability is, I think, the most important thing in my job, my business. Like, I think I would argue that being available sometimes is, and you can be a lot less of a talented player, but if you're available
to play
all the time to play.
Yeah.
Whereas the more talented player who is a lot, you know, raw talent, faster, stronger, everything. But if he gets hurt, what good is that going to do if he's not on the field, right? So, like, I think longevity, like you were talking about, and, like, staying available, getting on the field, like, that's the most important thing.
Do players in the NFL understand the connection with food? Or
no.
Is they don't?
No.
Is
no.
It, they don't
not
see
Not at
it.
All.
Okay.
At least in my lens. You know, I think from what I've seen observed, it's like fast food, fried chicken, like, you know, just comfort foods, like
calories,
you know, and just calories, like
just whatever tastes good.
Yeah, I mean, and I look at these guys and they're like, they're physical specimens, right? And they're like, they kill a workout, like, you know, just like freaking benching like 400 pounds, right? And then like, you know, going home and eating Popeyes or something like that. It's like, or like, you know, some guys eat like, you know, Popeyes before a game, like Saturday night before a game, they'll like order it to the hotel, which is insane.
Wow.
And I'm just sitting there like, what the heck?
What do you eat before a game usually?
Like pre-night or like day of?
Well, both.
Okay. So like, so it depends on, so if the game's like a 1 o'clock game on Sunday or like a night game, that'll vary a little bit. But like usually pre-game, I always have like, so they always have, it's actually pretty good, like a filet mignon.
Okay.
So I have a steak, a filet mignon steak, and then they make like this sweet potato mash.
Okay.
So I have that, and then a shit ton of fruit.
Okay.
Like pineapple, blueberries, all types of berries, banana, raw honey. I usually bring my like own raw honey.
That's amazing.
But and like the night before the game too, like, yeah. So Saturday, I mean, my wife makes fun of me and like, my teammates too probably look at me like, they always make fun of me too. Like, you know, when I posted, I think you saw it the other day when I posted the story of like, so I had like two patties of like grass-fed beef and then like on top, like bone marrow.
Uh-huh.
And then the sweet potatoes all mashed up and like guys on the team, they like, they don't even know what the bone marrow is. they're like seeing me in the facility the next day, like, what the hell are you eating? Like, you eat guts? Like, what? I'm just sitting there like, yeah, like, I don't know. I'm healing my body. I'm nourishing my body. Like,
and what do they say to that?
But no, I mean, they don't say anything. And like, so it's funny, like I'm talking to some of the guys doing rehab, like, you know, they had surgery or something like that. And they're like, what are you eating? Like, I'm like, no, it's bone marrow. Like, you should try some. You're rehabbing. Like,
yeah.
That'll probably help your. So I was just like sitting there laughing. It's pretty funny.
Are they open to that when they say it?
No,
when it comes from another player who's like starting, you know, you're starting, you're in there with these guys. They've got to respect you. They've got to respect your abilities and like your resilience. They still don't.
No, not in this way.
No,
I feel like this. It's just such. This type of eating is like, it's so out there compared to like the mainstream, you know. And like, I don't know. It's just so out there. I don't think they're like, no one's like really wanting to take a chance. And there's a few guys that like eating more red meat, and like we talk about like good animal fats and stuff like that.
Good,
like,
animal. That's a cool sentence to say to someone. Good animal fats. Those words are not usually, you know, if people are seeing that, they're starting to figure it out.
Right. But like, yeah, I mean, there's probably one or two guys that I have conversations with on my team about like what we eat and stuff like
there's
that.
There's a couple, but
there's
not,
a couple,
but like some small minority.
No. I'm like the freaking geek like at school, or like, you know, the kid that they bully for what I eat and stuff like
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah.
It's crazy because like here you are on a professional sports team going out of your way to make extra effort to perform better, to support them.
Right.
And there's still a little tribalism where they're like, why aren't you doing what we're doing?
Yeah.
That's weird.
It is weird. It's a weird dynamic.
That's
but
a weird
hey,
thing.
Maybe I'll last in the league a lot longer.
Yeah,
than
yeah.
Then, so
yeah, we'll maybe see. Maybe as you become more senior in the league, you got to wonder. But I mean, I don't know Tom Brady, but I just saw from afar, you know, he had this whole thing about diet, the TB12 diet, which people think was plant-based.
There's no way it was.
It wasn't plant-based at all. It was, that's bullshit. He ate vegetables and they called it plant-based, but I think he was eating chicken. Maybe he limited red meat, fine, but he was eating animal protein.
Yeah.
He was basically eating clean, which I think.
He's also a quarterback too.
Yeah.
So, and no, I'm not.
And he's not taking as many hits.
I'm not discrediting him, like. Oh, forever, 20 plus years in the league, and he's still doing. Or, I mean, obviously he's retired now, but what he was able to do, like,
so less hits,
amazing.
less hits
for sure. Like,
right,
you know, I would say probably the running back position is probably the lowest amount of shelf life, or
that's what I was going to ask
life
you. Who gets the most damage? The running
backs.
Yeah,
their knees, everything. They're just their legs just go to hell. Like their knees just get bad. And then after that, probably like, I don't know, like linemen maybe.
Oh yeah, they're every single
linemen,
play.
Every play, they're smacking heads, like that stuff. And linebackers, safeties, guys that make tackles, like my position, make tackles every play. And so, I mean, every tackle too is like a car crash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many tackles did you have last season? Do you know?
Like over 100. Yeah. Like each season, probably right around.
You were like one of the most on the team, second or third on the team, right?
Yeah.
In tackles.
Yeah.
100 car crashes a season.
100 car crashes. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. No, it's insane, but no, it's all been great, man. I made that huge transformation to you know, more animal based. So we can go into more. So
yeah, what's your diet like now?
Yeah. So I mean, I think I eat basically exactly what you eat. I think. I probably don't do as much like honey or maple syrup as you. I know you love honey and maple syrup, but
the YouTube audience is going to roast me for that, but it's good.
No, it is good. It's good. I swear. I do eat that a lot. Like, I mean, this morning I had like before workout, I had a banana with raw honey before workout.
Before workout.
Yeah. Before workout. But like, you know, I do animal based, like the majority, I would probably say 3/4 of my carbs come from fruit and honey. I guess I don't do really maple syrup as much. But yeah, I'd say 3/4 of my carbs come from fruit. Mm-hmm. And then like 1/4 probably comes from like sweet potatoes and regular potatoes. I don't eat the skin though. I only eat the insides, mm-hmm. organic, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But you're not eating carbs. I think most players in the league, because I've talked to a couple other NFL players, they're mm-hmm. getting carbs from like oatmeal, grains, pancakes, right?
No, you don't do that. I don't do that.
That's great.
I don't think I do well with like gluten.
Yeah.
And like,
what happens?
I feel inflamed, bloated, all that.
Your joints hurt a little more?
Joints hurt, yeah, a little creakier. Like, if like, say, I don't know, like, ever since I've been animal-based, like, I've been, you like do back squat or stuff like that?
I do. I mean, I'm surfer, so, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, okay, so like.
I don't do it as much.
So like, I'm really big into like depth. And like going deep as hell, right?
Yeah.
And like getting full range of motion. And like ever since I like made this transformation, go more animal based and like cut out like all the inflammatory oils,
right?
And grains,
yeah.
all that type of stuff. Like I've been able to get more range of motion.
Deeper squats.
Like sometimes like I swear, like when I was in college, like I would try to go deep and like I feel like my hips were like, you know, like an old man, like creaky, you know, I wasn't able to as smooth or like, I don't know. I think there's something there, you know,
yeah.
And ever since I started that, you know, started the animal based diet, I feel like I've been able to go more in range of motion, deeper squats, better range of motion, all that.
That's amazing. Now you had a period of keto too.
Yeah.
When was that?
In college.
Okay. At UW?
At UW.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So that's like, I don't know. I think maybe it was more like 4 or 5 years ago. It was like keto was like the big fad like then. And
yes,
I think it still is like around.
I'd say it's fading.
But I think like 5 or 6 years ago, like keto was like a pretty big fad diet. Right. And so like my parents tried it and they're like telling me about it. And like, I think before that, like for whatever reason, I was always like low carb. Prior to that,
mm-hmm.
and for whatever reason, I don't know why, I just thought maybe, I don't know why, but like I was low carb before that, so I kind of was already, not necessarily keto, but basically like in college, I tried cutting out all carbs, and dude, the electrolyte issues and the cramping and like just out of practice, I probably cramp like every single practice and like the cramps at night, like trying to sleep and like, you know, waking up in the middle of the night to go pee and you step in and like your calf cramping up and you fall into the ground. Like it was some bad memories, but
I get flashbacks just hearing about it.
And
I got PTSD.
I think my recovery was so shitty when I was keto and not, I didn't have any carbs. Like, my recovery was horrible. Like, I think basically like this past year, I felt like, I would measure my recovery by how I would feel the Sunday after a game, like what day my body felt fully turned over.
Like, so if you played on a Sunday,
uh-huh. what day of the next week leading up to the next Sunday before the game, like when I felt like, oh, I'm good to go. Like I can go play this game right now. Like my body felt fully turned over and recovered from the previous game. And so that's how I'd measure like my recovery throughout the week.
Uh-huh.
Just so I can kind of like measure it like physically, I guess. But so it'd always be like in college, it would always be what we play on Saturdays. And so it wouldn't be until like Friday or Saturday, literally Saturday, the day or the week after the previous game, right? That I wouldn't feel fully good. I'd be in the hotel room. Okay, like I'm ready, like I'm pumped up, you know. But this year, I would feel that by our off day on Tuesday, which is 2 days after the Sunday game.
You're back.
Back, fully ready to turn over.
With more carbohydrates. How many carbohydrates do you think you're eating now?
Like I said, I don't.
Probably don't be shy.
Over 400.
I love it.
How many do you do?
Probably 300 plus.
Yeah. So I would probably do the same amount as you in fruit. And then I probably 100 grams in rice or potatoes or sweet potatoes.
I eat a lot of honey.
Yeah.
And then I do fruit juice. So mostly I'm honey and fruit juice. And I'm in LA. I'm just going to the gym right now, hitting the bag and doing some work. So I'm not really working that hard. When I'm surfing like 2 hours a day, but it's not that crazy. I mean, I think the amount of energy that I'm expending is not near what you guys are doing with your practices and stuff. I want to ask you a little bit about what your training is like, but yeah, but I still feel better. And this is something that I've experimented with. And it's been an interesting journey for me coming from, because we were talking about this before the podcast, I started strict carnivore. I started zero carb, quote unquote. And then I added carbohydrates back and I just felt better. Right. And so by the time I added carbohydrates back, people had found my stuff. And so now there's a lot of people who found me as strict carnivore and feel a little betrayed that I'm eating carbohydrates. Like, they're like, this guy, I mean, I wrote a book about the carnivore diet and it's been humbling and a good learning experience to kind of change my mind and learn and grow. But it's an experiment for me now. Like, do I feel good with 300? What if I eat 350?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever eaten 400 in a day, but I could do the experiment. It wouldn't be hard. I could definitely eat a jar. I could eat a jar of honey tomorrow, no problem. I mean, this raw milk with honey, kefir with honey, like I could smash 400 carbs, no problem. Right. And it would be interesting to see how I felt. My suspicion, my hypothesis, my pretest hypothesis would be that I'd feel better, that I'd feel that I'd feel like I'd probably sleep well and recover. If I had a hard day in the gym here or a long surf session, maybe I'd feel better with 400. And I always weigh myself every day. I'm like 160 right now, 162. So I'm not that heavy. But even, I mean, I was talking to Jimmy, my buddy here helping us with the cameras, like, even if I do 400 grams of carbohydrates consistently, I don't think I gain weight because at 300, I'm not gaining weight.
Right.
And I don't think I would. And people are going to say to this, and so I'll address this, that I'm spiking my blood glucose too high and it's going to cause problems. And I've done previous videos. So if you guys are listening to this and you want the previous videos on hemoglobin A1C or glycation, please listen to those and why I don't think this is an issue. But I'll give a summary real quick. Just the idea that I think continuous glucose monitors are super valuable. Have you seen these?
Yeah.
But I think that the problem with continuous glucose monitors is they give people a fear of a rising glucose.
Yeah.
I mean, my fasting insulin is 3. You know, have you taken your blood work?
Mm-mm.
No? We got to get you some, we got to get some blood work.
That should be
like, cool. So my fasting insulin is 3. One of my friend's dad's fasting insulin was like 4.2 and he's zero carb carnivore. Mm. Right? So his fasting insulin was higher than mine.
Right.
And I eat way more carbs than him.
Right.
And so just this is just one-to-one comparison, but you can also look at my hemoglobin A1C. My hemoglobin A1C was 5.4, which is an average blood sugar of, I think, around 103 if I did the calculation in the last podcast. And his hemoglobin A1C was 5.6, and he has zero carbs in his diet. So he has zero carbs in his diet, and he has more glycation on his red blood cells, which is what a hemoglobin A1C is. It's where a glucose molecule and potentially fructose molecules glycate the hemoglobin and you measure it. It's just a measure of average blood sugar. I think people are confused and believe that any blood glucose spike is harmful for your body. And that's just not true. There's just not good evidence to suggest that moving your glucose from 85, which is where my fasting blood sugar lives, 80, 85, and I suspect yours as well. If you move your fasting blood sugar from 80 or 85 to 120 or 130 or even 140 milligrams per deciliter, when I eat 200 grams of honey straight, people would say, oh, you're spiking your blood glucose. That's causing damage to the glycocalyx, these little frond-like glycosaminoglycans inside your arteries. But I just don't find any evidence that for that when I look at it. And so this is all to say that the blood glucose monitors are valuable, and I have worn them in the past, but I think that they make people fearful of any blood glucose spike. Whereas I think that, and perhaps there's a difference, but I don't really think it's a major one between people who are healthy like you and I, and you know, like I'm a semi-athlete, you're a professional athlete. Maybe people would say, oh, you guys can handle blood glucose spikes, but we can't because we're diabetic or pre-diabetic. But that remains to be seen. I think that people that are diabetic or pre-diabetic can adjust their carbohydrates down, but they still need carbohydrates and they can still eat carbohydrates from fruit and honey because they want their thyroid to work. But there are people who also listen to this podcast who want to be athletes, who are healthy, and who want to perform. And I think for these people, it's pretty clear that those blood glucose spikes are not harmful for humans. And we're confusing it and saying, oh, in a diabetic, when someone has diabetic physiology and they spike their blood sugar, they get endothelial dysfunction. Well, that person is diabetic and the blood glucose spike is, you know, tied to other things and they're insulin resistant. It's very complex physiology. It's all to say that I just don't believe that, at least for me or for you, to start, 400 grams of carbohydrates would be harmful.
No.
And then, you know, scaling that back for someone that's not working out like you.
Yeah.
Or surfing like me.
400.
Yeah. Like, maybe 100, 120 grams of carbohydrates for even someone that is obese and trying to lose weight, I don't think that's harmful for them.
I don't think I ever want to live a life, live a day low carb ever again. I mean, doesn't it screw up all your hormones and like your sleep? And then it's just like a whole trickling effect, right?
That's my experience. Yeah. I mean, I think that when you restrict carbohydrates, and this is high level, but carbohydrates are a signal of abundance to the human body.
Yeah.
For both men and women. And I think women are perhaps an even more clear illustration of this, because when women go low carb, their menstrual cycles get messed up, they're not as fertile, they're not ovulating at the right time. It's just, it's different. Everything changes. And it's very clear with a woman when they're not eating enough carbohydrates that the body is getting is receiving an absence or receiving a signal of winter or of scarcity and saying, it's not a good time to reproduce. There's not carbohydrates. And there must be something parallel for a man, whether it's our fertility, you know, our sperm production, whatever, our testosterone production is affected by this. We know there's been studies measuring the free testosterone to cortisol ratio in men, which is a good measure of athletic performance and recovery.
Right.
And people, the best ratios were seen when people had 60% of their carbohydrates from 60% of their calories from carbohydrates. 60%, that's a huge amount.
That is a huge amount.
That's a huge amount of carbohydrates. Yeah. I mean, if you're eating 3,000 calories, you think, okay, 60% of 3,000, is maybe, what is that calculation, 1,800 or so.
Yeah.
And then you got to divide that by four. You're looking at like over 400 grams of 400 grams of carbohydrates a day. It's intense. So
that is intense.
If you're
My wife loves carbs, though. That's good.
That's good for you. If you want to have babies, right? It's good for her health. Yeah, right. But it's just, I think it also depends on the type of carbohydrates, too, because people confuse.
Right.
I don't believe that high fructose corn syrup affects the human body the same way as honey and fruit.
Yeah.
And that's very nuanced and probably a whole separate conversation as well. But yeah, I think it's interesting. It's going to be individual between people. You don't need 400 grams of carbohydrates a day if you're not doing much. But I will say this, and maybe we can put a couple of the studies in the podcast, and then we'll get back to some of your training stuff. In the 1960s, actually the 1930s and 40s, there was something called the rice diet, and people ate white rice and table sugar. They had a very low-fat diet, and their diabetes reversed. So their diet was almost entirely carbohydrates. And most of it was table sugar.
Yeah.
And they had very low fat, and their diabetes reversed. And this is so wild. I mean, I forget this guy's name off the top of my head. Maybe I'll remember it. But it's called the rice diet. And we'll put the paper. And this is hundreds of diabetics.
Yeah.
And there are pictures in this. We'll put the pictures in the podcast. There are pictures of people who lost weight. I'll show you them after the podcast. People losing 100-plus pounds eating rice and table sugar. Now, in terms of micronutrients, you're not getting enough in this diet. But like, for people to really be stuck on the fact that rice or carbohydrates cause diabetes, and to see that if you just eat those things and you limit fat and you reverse your diabetes and you can lose 100-plus pounds, it's crazy. So there's interesting nuanced physiology. And my take on this is that when these people, when they had such low fat, they were not eating any seed oils. Yeah. They're not eating any polyunsaturated fats. And then I suspect, my hypothesis is that when you do that, you actually allow the body to get rid of the polyunsaturated fats from the membranes. And that changes the diabetic physiology. Because what happened with these people is wild, is that they came off the diet and they were able to liberalize their diet and they still didn't have diabetes.
Right.
The thing about keto is that, and I'm rambling, I apologize, but the thing about keto, thanks for tolerating me. The thing about keto is that when people stop doing keto, their diabetes will often come back when they have carbohydrates. The keto doesn't always fix the diabetes.
It covers it up?
It kind of covers it up. And people will debate that in the comments on YouTube, but I think it kind of covers it up because they'll try and come off keto and their blood sugars will go crazy. But what happened with this diet was that they were eating rice and sugar and basically pure carbohydrates.
Right.
And they came off the diet, they liberalized it, they added more fat, you know, they did more things, and their blood sugars didn't go crazy. They didn't develop diabetes again. So it fixed things, which to me is so interesting that if you go really low fat, which isn't something I'm advocating for, it's just an illustration of the biochemistry. Mm-hmm. If you go really low fat, it probably changes the composition of your cell membranes or allows your body to shift the cell membranes, because our bodies can make saturated fat. Yeah. And our bodies can convert that into monounsaturated fat. We can make these things, but polyunsaturated fats get stored, which is what we were talking about earlier with people and probably the shelf life of people with shitty diets. So that's so interesting to me. And it's just a rant about the fact that I don't fear carbohydrates, and I think most people would do better with them. So what kind of stuff are you doing? So you're in the off season now.
Yeah.
Did you you got a workout today?
Yeah, got a workout this morning.
What do you do in your off season training, and then what do you do during the season?
Yeah, so I guess I can take you through the whole day today. So I kind of went in.
What'd you eat for breakfast?
Okay, so I'll tell you what I ate the whole entire
day
before I came here. So first thing in the morning, I wake up around like 6 a.m. First thing I do, I drink some broth, mm-hmm. some bone broth. So it's Kettle on Fire. You know Kettle on Fire?
Yeah.
Bone broth. It's pretty good quality.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And so I do like the regenerative agriculture ones too. So
great.
They have the pasture-raised chicken bones mm-hmm. and then the grass-fed bones. And so I do a cup of each in the morning. The first thing I do, I drink that first thing in the morning. And then you're not going to like this because you don't like coffee. But so I do like a raw milk latte.
Okay. At least there's raw milk in there.
Yeah, at least there's raw milk. I know you hate coffee and all that stuff, but I started drinking coffee a couple years ago, and you know, I get the best coffee, you know, single origin,
sure.
mold free, you know, third party tested.
If you're going to do it,
all that stuff. Yeah, if I am going to do it, right? So, at least I have raw milk in there, right?
That's good. You got some nutrition in there.
So, I mean, I ate that around, 6:30 or something like that. Then usually like the sun is rising. I take my dogs. I got two golden retrievers and I take them like around the neighborhood, get some sunlight, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I get the body moving. I came back and then I had three pasture raised eggs, hard boiled eggs. And then with like half an avocado
mm-hmm.
And then a banana with like I was telling you pre-workout, I had the banana and raw honey.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to go work out. After I came back from workout, I grilled up like some patties a couple days ago. So I had about like probably a pound of ground beef into patties. Threw some raw cheddar on there.
Nice. This is post-workout.
Yeah, post-workout. Uh-huh. Post-workout meal. Some raw cheddar on the patties. Had like a half of the Japanese sweet potato.
Mm-hmm.
Cup of pineapple, and then some blueberries. And
okay.
Then I'm here. And then we're going to feast later.
We're going to feast on steaks
feast later
and
tonight
put
on
some
steak.
Maple syrup in your
raw
milk. That's amazing.
So then when I went to go work out today, I always usually in the off season, I always like try to address like injuries or like, you know, I play safety. I tackle every day. So my shoulders are like, you know, they need a little extra attention.
Uh-huh.
So usually I would start out like an hour of like rehab on, you know, I have like bum ankle from this past season that I twisted a couple times too. So just rehabbing the injuries that, kind of bugged me this past season. So that's like the first hour, like some prehab stuff going leading into the workout. And then, some activation stuff. So that's like the first hour, in the training room. And then usually, this past week it hasn't really been like sunny, but usually I walk around the field for like 30, 45 minutes, usually like, you know, direct sunlight. I take the shirt off, mm-hmm. get some vitamin D on mm-hmm. my body. This is like around 9 a.m. or something like that. So, I mean, the sun rays aren't going to be too crazy, but I always feel good warming up before workout doing that. And so, walk around 30, 45 minutes around the field and then hit about hour 15 minutes of training, uh-huh. lifting, workout.
What kind of lifts do you do?
So during the season, it's a lot like our strength coaches provide the workouts and stuff. And like right now I'm kind of like freestyling, winging it, doing like, I don't know. I always have fun like creating workouts for myself mm-hmm. and like, you know, just, you know, freestyling, like I said. And so right now, like doing a lot of like compound lifts, you know, back squat, front squat, trap bar deadlifts, you know, just a lot of that stuff and like some accessory stuff, but heavy lifting, a lot of like functional movements, supersetting them as well.
Okay.
A lot of like ankle mobility, tendon health in between the sets as well.
So when you're lifting, are you lifting like low reps, high weight for strength?
It changes. It changes throughout the season.
Okay.
And it changes like in the off season. I think the off season is always a good time to like chase weight and get strong as hell, right?
Uh-huh.
And like build your armor for the season.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like the season is more so like just trying to maintain and just trying to stay healthy,
right,
and keep healthy throughout the season. So like right now is the off season, like you're trying to pound weight and chase weight.
So you're going
and get strong as hell.
Heavyweight.
Yeah, heavyweight. Like this past week, like you know, I was squatting, back squatting like four plates on each side. Uh-huh. It's like 405.
Uh-huh.
Front squatting like 365.
Wow.
Like, for reps of like three or four, uh-huh, you know, usually pretty low. Right now, at least in the off season, mm-hmm, building strength, trying to get strong. You know, bench press, all that good stuff. But yeah, right now in the off season, you're trying to chase weight and get strong.
Get strong, yeah. It's interesting that you said, and this is cool because it's something that I learned recently on a podcast I did, that when you came home from lifting, I think that eating meat after a lift is an amazing thing. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, usually I surf. And here in LA, I've been going to a gym and mostly hitting a bag, but hitting a punching bag or kicking it. But I'll do some lifts. You know, I'll do some front squats or some like split squats or some, you know, lunges or something for the lower body, mostly for surfing, because I get so much paddling when I'm surfing. But after the workout, there's a couple minutes where I'm like, I'm not really hungry. And then I get hungry and I think, oh, red meat sounds really good.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this, but so like post-workout, your body absorbs creatine more avidly. So creatine is this an important energy currency in the muscles. And I think most athletes know about creatine. Yeah. And the fact that it's only found in animal foods,
which
is crazy to me to think
isn't that convenient?
Yeah, these guys are like, no red meat, but what, I'm going to supplement with creatine? You're a freaking professional football player, right? You're crazy. But the fact that you can get increased absorption of creatine after a workout is really cool. So like, I think that what you're doing is amazing. Like a pound of red meat after a workout, that's probably the best time.
Right.
Because it's going to go straight into those muscles. Yeah. And a pound of meat, maybe 2 grams of creatine, but that 2 grams is going to have an increased absorption post-workout. So that's the kind of
stuff. Right. So that's probably like if someone's supplementing 5 grams.
Who knows? But like, something, yeah.
That could, possibly equal the same.
Yes.
Just because it's absorbed a little.
It's absorbed a little better. Yeah. And the carbohydrates are going in more because you have the glycogen window. And
right.
it's the body is saying, give me the nutrients. Yeah. So especially after a workout, people should be getting in a little bit of salt, protein, carbohydrates, and creatine. Yeah. That's probably the best formula possible. It's crazy to me that you guys don't get taught that, you know, like I'm sure that maybe your teammates are doing that intuitively. At least getting, plant-based protein powder.
Most guys just hit like a post-workout shake, though.
I know.
And then like they go home and then maybe eat a meal or like eat dinner or something later. But like it's mostly just a post-workout shake.
I wonder how many of the post-workout shakes have creatine. Protein shakes are a strange thing. I'm always like, why wouldn't you just eat a steak?
Right.
Like just eat a steak with some honey.
Yeah, I think it's more like out of convenience, maybe.
It's easy, yeah.
It's easy, but like by then, like it's not as good as it doesn't taste as good and it's probably not as good for you.
And a lot of the shakes have sucralose.
Yeah,
you know, they have Splenda. They have Splenda. They have the Splenda and sucralose. The same thing. You know, it's the same molecule. And they have artificial sweeteners and they have all kinds of weird stuff in them. So it's crazy. What's striking to me is that these guys are at the top of you're a professional athlete,
right?
And you're still ruled by convenience.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is true. Maybe it's just something that I want to be true, that the guys who go the extra step are the guys that really have lunge, you know, that really, I guess there's raw talent underneath all of it, but I've got to believe that the guys who go the extra step who are more intentional, who are like, okay, that shake is convenient, but I'm actually going to cook a steak and eat that instead. And I'm going to get zinc and iron and creatine. And I'm going to get, you know, some B12 and B6 and so many nutrients that are more bioavailable in a whole food than it's just crazy to me.
I would guess probably like at least a quarter of guys on my teammates, their protein intake, at least a quarter of it is probably from protein shakes.
And you got to wonder what's in the protein shakes.
Yeah.
And maybe they're getting high quality, maybe not. You mentioned they're like plant-based protein shakes.
There are, but I mean, our nutritionist is actually he gets pretty good like supplements in. Like you heard of Momentous, it's Andrew Huberman always promotes them and stuff. So they have pretty good protein powders.
I would imagine they're good.
It's pretty clean, but
yeah.
I mean, like you said, go eat a steak.
Go eat a steak. I mean,
go cook up some burgers.
Yeah, like the Rams should be.
Dude, after practice, man, we should just have a grill out.
Yes.
Right there, dude, steaks.
Yes.
Right there, like after you walking off with your helmet and your pads, and everyone grabs a freaking ribeye.
Yeah, I'll come. I'll do it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna grill you guys some steaks in next practice.
That'd be perfect.
That's the thing. I think the guys would be like, oh my, like that.
I bet we would recover better. I bet yep. we'd win more games, and we're gonna win the Super Bowl again.
Yeah.
Eating
yeah.
steaks after
yeah,
practice.
Throw in a little heart and be like, hey, you want some of this? Or
see, one thing too, I want to touch on this too, that I've been challenging myself. So I used to do like cheat meals.
You did?
I used to, uh-huh. yes. And like sometimes, like, you know, sometimes like my wife will, you know, we'll go get In-N-Out Burger and, you know, I'll get like a lettuce wrap. Like
we went to In-N-Out yesterday. I can tell you about In-N-Out.
Okay.
It's not cooked in seed oils.
They're not?
No, the burger is just cooked on the grill. It's
oh, yeah, okay. So I know I asked them
but
about
the fries,
that.
But yeah.
the fries are
yeah,
bad.
Don't talk about the fries.
The fries are bad. But, yeah, sometimes we'll go to In-N-Out. We'll get a burger and stuff. But, like, I think one thing that, like, I really was, like, challenging myself is, like, after games and stuff, it's, like, so easy. You burn so many calories. You're like a furnace, right? It's, like, so easy to like, be like, oh, like, you know, you're so exhausted. You want to just eat something just like greasy and all that stuff. And like, I mean, that was like college days. Like, I can't tell you how many times in college, like after games, I would order a Domino's pizza and just kill a Domino's pizza.
I don't doubt it.
And like, that's like everyone though. Like, and so like, I'm really trying to like challenge myself. Like, even after games, like, I know you're going to be tired and stuff, but like, how much better am I going to get a jump on my recovery if I go home and cook up a ribeye and eat some good high quality carbs?
Yeah.
How much of, am I going to get a better jump on? Maybe I'll start feeling better by the day after on Monday rather than Tuesday. And so like, I always challenge myself with that too.
Now, were you doing cheat meals historically after the games, or would you do cheat meals like?
Like during... once a week. Like,
and what was going through your mind? You're like,
I don't know, dude. It's like, you know,
I'm not judging you.
No, I know. But you know, people with fad diets and they, you know,
cheat meal day.
Yeah, cheat meal day, like on Saturday or on the weekend or something to like reward yourself for. But like, I don't think those diets, they won't last, you know? And I think someone told me, I heard this a long time ago, but like the best diet is the diet you will stick to.
Well, I think that it shouldn't even be a diet. It's more like a lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
And I've always thought that when you have a cheat meal, you kind of psychologically sabotage yourself.
Right.
If you're spending 6 days of the week dreaming about your one day of getting to eat the foods that you really want to eat, you're basically putting yourself in a mental prison
right.
and saying, I'm eating all this food that I don't want to really want to eat. And then on Sunday, I get to eat the foods that I really want to eat.
Right.
And to me, that's backwards. It's like, I see The Rock doing this and I think it's just, that's the wrong way to do it.
Yeah.
I think you've got to shift your mentality and think, I think that it also carbs help and raw milk and raw cream and cheese help because it's a lot of the same kind of foods that are in cheat meals. It's just in a better form, you know? So like, I could give you, like, I'll put some maple syrup in this for you tonight.
Yeah,
that's a fucking cheat meal.
Dude,
you know?
That's like better than a cheat meal.
Yeah, who needs it? Why do you need a cheat meal if I put raw cream in there? Like, and I mean, people be like, oh, the gluten. Well, the gluten is addictive. Forget that. But you could eat carbohydrates. You know, you could eat a steak with butter.
Yeah.
And like, there's your cheat meal, but you didn't need to eat a cheat meal. There's a meal that's very rewarding, but it's not, I think, going to set you back physiologically. So right. I think that if people deprive themselves, the problem is also that people deprive themselves of nutrient-rich foods during the week because they think that they're bad for them, like carbohydrates.
Eating like chicken and broccoli.
Yes, chicken and
like
broccoli.
Tilapia.
And then you need a cheat meal because
right.
you're going crazy.
Right.
But if you eat, there are nutritive, nourishing ways to eat fat and butter, you know, and cream and sugar in honey and maple syrup or juice or that I think will satisfy the same things. And then you never need the shitty food on Sunday or whatever your cheat day is that makes you, that then sets you back. I think it's just like, you would never, no runner, you know, no distance runner, no short distance runner would ever have a race strategy where they just stopped in the middle of the race
and
ran back a few steps to like, oh, you know, if I'm only running forward, then my muscles are going to get tired. So if I stop in the middle of the race and just run backwards, then my muscles will be better and then I'll go forward. Like people are going to blow you away.
It
like
doesn't make sense,
the guys who like stop and go backwards every week, I don't think they understand how much that's slowing their progress. Can you imagine like if somebody was running a marathon and every 10 miles or every 5 miles, they stopped and ran backwards, you know, that's essentially what a cheat meal is for me. I don't understand it.
And to hit you on a cheat meals again too, like on something else, or like another note, but like after you would eat that, like how your body feels the morning after you wake up, like you feel so inflamed and your body hurts. And like, imagine after a Sunday game where you have 10 car crashes and then you go and you eat all this, like, you know, Wingstop or, you know, fried chicken and all these inflammatory oils and stuff. And then on top of all the 10 car crashes, how shitty your body's going to feel.
It's crazy.
It is insane. And like, this is another story too. You'll love this soup. So my older brother, Austin, he actually put me, so he like showed me your content,
okay,
and showed me like Animal Base and stuff like, and like before I was kind of, you know, kind of wing doing my own stuff. And he actually showed me like your content and you and all that stuff. But like, he would always tell me stories, cause like he went Animal Base first, and like, he would always tell me like all his like, different points of inflammation, like, you know, different injuries. He played football too. And like all these past injuries that he's had, ever since he went Animal Based, like all these, aches and pains, any injuries that he's had in the past completely wiped away.
So cool.
After going Animal Based. Right. And like, he has some funny stories too. Like sometimes he's a night muncher. He loves eating at night. And so like, he'll sometimes, you know, like he doesn't do like cheat meals, but like sometimes he loves savory. He loves like bag of chips. So sometimes he'll go off the train, and like he'll get into like a bag of chips, and the bag of chips are like, what? They're a million seed oils in them. And then like he'd tell me the stories of the next morning of like all the inflammation and the pain of like, oh,
so
dude,
wild.
I can't even move.
Wow. That
like after eating like a bag of chips or like just going off the wagon. Right. And from like Animal Base to that. So like, yeah, if he's listening to that, shout out to him.
Stop eating the chips, bro. Just eat some honey.
No, but he introduced me to you. So
that's cool.
No, it's cool. But no, it's been cool.
Now, it's interesting to me that there are so many anecdotes like this, and the detractors will say anecdote, anecdote, anecdote. But I think, how many hundreds, if not thousands, of stories like this does someone need to hear before they think maybe there's something to that?
Right.
Because when I talk about this way of eating, like an animal-based diet, organs, meat, fruit, honey, raw dairy, I think people can kind of get behind this no seed oils. Mm-hmm. And some people from the paleo communities or the keto communities can understand no grains. But then when I start talking about vegetables, people lose their mind, you know, leaves and stems and roots and seeds of plants and the vegetables. But, you know, I think that probably the majority of people's improvements in terms of aches and pains come from the low hanging fruit, the sodas, the high fructose corn syrup, the seed oils. Mm-hmm. But there are people who feel better when they don't eat leaves, when they don't eat kale and spinach. You know, spinach, super high in oxalates. Tons of, like, almonds, nuts. Like, these mess up people's digestion. Like, people feel better. Their guts get better. And there are hundreds, if not thousands, of anecdotes of people who feel better cutting these foods out. And I just think, okay, eventually people will catch on and realize, like, these foods don't really do much for you.
No.
And, you know, who knows with your brother or with you whether your aches and pains are... I'm sure the majority of it is cutting out the garbage seed oils and the other stuff.
Yeah.
But for some people, even cutting out the vegetables helps as well, which is crazy. I mean, I would be happy if most NFL players ate more vegetables, because that's probably better than
what they're eating.
Yeah, most of the shit they're eating. But I'm just excited to see some of them understanding this stuff in a deeper way. Do you have any ideas being on the inside as a player? Is it just show them, don't tell them? Is it guys like you who just over time have more resilience, more longevity, and better performance in these guys to show them, like, how do we help players in the NFL? And the reason I'm so interested in this in professional sports is that, just to be frank, you guys are like demigods, you know? Mm-hmm. Like people look up to you, you know?
Right.
And I think that the US government is never going to change the nutritional guidelines in a way that's going to meaningfully affect or change people's perspectives on food.
Right.
But if professional athletes started saying, hey, I cut out seed oils.
Yeah.
People would pay attention.
Right.
You know, if professional athletes said, I eat meat and I'm proud of it and I think it's healthy for me, people would pay attention. Or if professional athletes this is the dream, one day said, like, I eat liver.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or I eat heart.
Yeah.
That would change the world. Like, that's right. I think that's the biggest, one of the biggest microphones out there, is just that people see these athletes. And so I just wonder, how do we help your teammates, like, understand the connection? Because there's got to be a connection here.
There's got to be. See, I ponder the same thing. Like, I think about the same thing all the time. And, you know, it's difficult because, like, I feel bad for saying this, but, like, I think it's gotten to such a point where I'm, like, they're too far gone. Like, I can't even, like, I'm wasting my time. And, like, I mean, literally, dude, I'm literally, like, getting, not, like, bully, like, friendly bully. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, like, friendly joking. Like, dude, what are you eating? Like, you know, just all that stuff. And, like, I don't know. It's just at a point where I'm just, like, all right, like, you guys keep doing you and see how long you guys' career will last. But I think I'm, like, my whole life, I feel like, I mean, I have some raw talent, some pure talent, but, like, I think compared to my counterparts and my teammates and some of the guys in the league, I'm not as fast and strong, as big as these guys. And so I think my whole entire life, I've always tried to find, like, the 1%, like, how can I gain this edge?
Yeah.
How can I gain this advantage? And I think, shit, ever since I started this diet, I think I've gained, you know, 10%.
That's amazing.
But, like, you know what I'm saying, where, like, I'm always trying to find the slight
yeah.
edge, you know, and how do I can gain an advantage against my opponent, how I can, you know, stay longer in the league. I mean, like I said, the league, this business, all about availability, how
yeah.
long you can last.
Yeah.
And I think nutrition is probably the biggest component to that.
It's got
to
be.
And so I think I've always been one of those guys. And, you know, there's a few guys that always trying to, you know, find that little slight edge that they can try to gain. And so I think that's where you can kind of penetrate and,
yeah.
and get to those guys. But, like, the other guys, like, they get too far gone.
Man. I wonder. You know, I'm not even a professional athlete, but I think just like you, I'm just trying to get that edge, you know?
Yeah, everyone, like, yeah.
I just want to, I don't know why. I think that I started real late, man. I was not an athletic kid. I hit puberty really late. I started running in college. And I was eating mostly oatmeal.
Oh.
And I got I got a stress fracture in my femur in college
yeah.
from running.
What do you think that's
just
lack of meat?
Phytic acid,
yeah.
you know, phytates. And I mean, oats okay. are so high in phytic acid. So many people eat oatmeal for breakfast.
Yeah.
And I've even seen intelligent, well-intentioned health influencers on Instagram say, oatmeal is so good for breakfast.
Right.
And I think, no, it's horrible. Like, it's so full of phytic acid, which is this large molecule that chelates minerals.
Mm-hmm.
So you're eating oatmeal. I was eating oatmeal with milk, and I just wasn't absorbing any calcium. And anything, any other calcium in my gut with the oats is going to get, the majority of it is going to get, or at least a significant portion of it is going to get chelated, which means it bites onto it and you don't absorb it.
Right, yeah. I was going to ask, there's some actually in oats that doesn't allow you to absorb
minerals.
Any other, like, nutrients, right?
Yeah, yeah, minerals specifically, like
okay.
calcium, magnesium, zinc. So any divalent cations, like the minerals, will get
right.
pulled out. And the same compound, phytic acid, is in things like beans, it's in nuts,
yeah.
it's in grains. And so people don't understand that these foods are like negative foods. They're
right,
pulling
right.
stuff out of your, they're preventing you from absorbing things. And oxalates do the same thing. I mean, oxalates in spinach, oxalates in chard, oxalates in beet greens, oxalates in almonds, turmeric powder, oxalates in all kinds of foods. They prevent you from absorbing things. I mean, it's been shown with oxalates that if you give someone a big bolus of oxalates in food, it can change the serum calcium. Like, you can actually pull calcium out of the blood. Or the body has to change, you know, has to actually pull calcium out of the bones to keep the calcium in the blood at a certain level. But it's pretty wild what can happen with these anti-nutrients. And so that's just a wild thing for me, like how many nutrients are you absorbing versus what you're actually eating?
Right.
And people don't understand that. So I just think, like, how do we help athletes understand that their nutrition is so critical for their long-term longevity?
And dude, I don't know. I think it's such a long shot. Yeah, I mean, we could try, but
we could try.
I think it's such.
I bet I
time.
Walk in there. It's 5'9", 160. Who the fuck is this guy? Like, you're not a football player, dude. I don't think they'd even care. Like, I don't know. I want to try. I'd love to try and talk to your teammates and see if we can convince them. But I don't know. I think that it's like it takes work, and until they have an injury, they may not get it.
Exactly. An injury woke me up. You know,
and that's so, what makes me sad is that when you're injured. The doctor, the team doctor, nobody's coming to you. Like, when you're injured is when the dietitian nutritionist needs to come to you and be like, hey, bro, I got you.
Right.
Like weak.
But I think that goes back to like the mainstream medical, right? Like they just try to cover up the problems, right? Yeah. They're not trying to get to the root of the issue.
How many times does a team doctor give you guys things like ibuprofen?
Oh, man. Yeah, well, I don't, you know, we probably shouldn't talk about all that stuff. But yeah, it's not good.
I mean, it's legal.
I mean, it's out there. It's transparent that there are a lot of pain pills and a lot of anti-inflammatory.
I mean, that
pills.
Stuff's legal. The doctor's not out of scope doing that. It's just what's crazy to me is that I don't think players understand, and maybe the doctors understand or don't, or the players just want it. Oftentimes the patient, in this case the player, just wants it and the doctor feels obligated to give it. I mean, you're a team doctor for the Los Angeles Rams. You're not going to say to this guy, you shouldn't take ibuprofen and suffer with your pain. But I don't think people understand that the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, ibuprofen, naproxen, which is Aleve, these actually slow healing.
Yeah.
And they slow tendon healing, they slow bone growth healing, they slow bone regrowth. They're slowing healing by preventing the resolution of inflammation. Because when you completely stop the inflammation, it gets rid of anything that pulls away the inflammation in the end. And so your body needs this process of inflammation to heal an injury. And I just think it's the same parallel, right? Like how many players are getting bad advice from their doctors? And how many humans listening to this podcast are taking ibuprofen, naproxen, you know, and Tylenol is a different one, and it's no better. It's actually worse because of the way it depletes glutathione in the liver. But it's crazy to think. I mean, we did a little piece of content about non-steroidal anti-inflammatories in a drugstore. I don't think people understand that those create leaky gut. They damage your gut. Mm-hmm. It's just like alcohol. It damages your gut. So it's wild that, like, I don't know, maybe we just need better doctors. I don't know. Like, they need to have a different perspective.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know.
It's crazy. I mean, it's like, you know, people, I see it in everything. Like I see it in surfing. I was watching a video from one of my friends, Nathan Florence, and he broke his back surfing Jaws, which is this like 25.
Yeah, Maui, right?
Yeah. It's gnarly. And he broke his back. And I'm pretty sure he said, I took a bunch of ibuprofen for the pain. And he was saying, if I didn't take the ibuprofen, I didn't sleep. But I'm thinking, man, I think he broke T12, I don't know, something like that. But one of the thoracic vertebrae he broke, like a compression fracture when he fell in the wave. Yeah. And he was taking ibuprofen. And I was thinking, man, like nobody told you. It's going to be hard for you to sleep because of the pain, but at least someone should have told him the pros and cons. Like it's going to help you sleep, but it's also going to slow the healing of your back.
Yeah, there's no way they tell them that.
No way. He might have just taken it on his own. Who knows if a doctor was giving it to him. But yeah, that stuff is pretty wild to think. Like, I wish the doctors in the NFL, maybe that's the thing, is we can teach doctors in the NFL or professional sports, like, this is nutrition.
Yeah.
Like, because when players get injured, you think, like, okay, how do you recover? Like, you need, man, maybe you need to take microcrystalline hydroxyapatite. Has anyone ever told you about that? Like, that's just ground up bones. Like, you know, we make that hardened soil. It's called bone matrix. It's basically like the center of a bone, the cortex of a bone is microcrystalline hydroxyapatite. And it makes sense that if you eat a ground up bones, your body can absorb it. But like, how many people get fractures and don't end up taking bioavailable calcium as microcrystalline hydroxyapatite from a good grass-fed source like that?
Yeah,
I sent some to Nathan for that. But then, you know, there's scapula and trachea cartilage that has specific growth factors. John Pruden studied this, and it's been shown to help with like wound healing. But like, nobody in the NFL is taking that to recover, right?
No, not at all.
And how many guys, do you eat liver?
I do your pills.
Oh, yeah, amazing.
I had a bad experience with liver once.
We got some liver in the fridge.
Yeah, I will. We'll eat some liver for sure. But no, I mean, I just do the pills. It's out of convenience.
Fair.
I probably should. I mean,
the pills are great, man. I'm a fan of the pills.
No, yeah. I mean, the pills are so easy to pop and stuff. Yeah.
What's cool about the pills is there's good evidence that when you freeze dry the organs, it actually preserves a lot of the growth factors, which is interesting because if you cook an organ, so they did these experiments in the 50s and 60s where they cooked organs, you lose some of the growth factors.
Okay.
And so when you freeze dry, it actually preserves the growth factors. I'm a huge fan of people eating fresh organs when they can, but if you can't, that's why I'm really proud of what we do at Hardened Soil with the desiccated organs. But we'll get you some fresh liver. But I mean, there's nobody in there. I mean, this, I think, is the future of professional sports. And obviously, I'm completely biased. But it's guys who you know, break their arm and they're doing microcrystalline hydroxyapatite. Yeah. They're doing trachea and scapula cartilage.
Yeah.
They're doing liver for the vitamin A and the folate and the riboflavin. They're maybe doing thymus, which is this immune gland behind the sternum to help with immune stuff. And they're eating either gut indigestion, which is our gut supplement, which contains gut, or they're eating intestines to help with like keeping the gut healthy. Anyway, that I think that's how you make the superhuman athlete, in my opinion. I'm just surprised nobody's done it yet.
No, I know.
Or if they do, they're not talking. Maybe people are keeping a secret, but I don't think anybody's doing this, man. Like, nobody's eating guts. Teammates think you are.
Yeah, yeah. Freaking bone marrow. They've never seen bone marrow.
We should get you some real guts and be like, yeah.
No, but I think it's interesting because I think like when someone has a major injury or has surgery, like, you know, they're rehabbing in the training room. But like, why isn't nutrition or like a part of that whole plan of at least the first 3-4 months from rehabbing and recovering? Like, yeah, you can work out and you can rehab the stuff, but like, why not add on top of that, like the nutrition, fueling all that?
How much faster could you recover?
You could totally change the landscape of rehab. I felt like all trainers, all rehab, all those guys, they should have a knowledge like you. How fast would they recover? How much more faster?
It certainly wouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and I bet it would help, which is why it's exciting to connect with you and think like, well, maybe we can talk to them and start with the Rams or who, you know, because, you know, I mean, it would just be really cool to start planting the seeds and thinking like, can we get, because I think it's only going to take a few players to do it and be like, you know, I think if you're playing, a few of these guys, if they see it and they feel it, they'll believe. And they'll, whoa.
They just got to try it, right?
They have to try it.
Because if they, I mean, they're not going to feel worse.
You're not going to feel worse.
You're not going to feel worse. Like, I bet 99% are going to feel 10 times better.
I think they're going to feel a lot better.
Like, once they cut out all those seed oils, like, I mean, guys talk about around the league all the time. Like, yeah, it is a physical sport, but guys talk about, oh, every morning I wake up hurting, like everything hurts, right? And they're always complaining about injuries. But like, I wonder if anything would change if they changed their diet cut out their seed oils.
It absolutely would.
Right?
Yeah. And I think it's interesting to think like, how do we hypnotize them? How do we trick them into doing that? You know, because I mean, it's fair. These guys are super successful. In some ways, they're kings of the world, right?
And all their entire lives, they've been treated as kings.
Yes.
Top of the top.
Yeah.
And like, they're invincible.
Yeah. Who's to tell them what to do? Right?
Exactly.
And yeah, so I think it takes humility. And that's why I'm so impressed with what you've done. And your intention, like the way that you thought about this stuff, is so cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, it's great talking to you.
Hell yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the podcast. I'm excited about maybe, you know, grilling some steaks for the Rams soon.
Yeah, dude. Freaking after practice.
Yeah. Sneak in some liver pills or something with these guys and see what we can do.
Seriously.
Awesome. Thanks, brother. We'll keep you posted on how everything goes with your continued training and your recovery, and we'll keep people up to date how we do with changing.
Maybe I gotta come out to Costa Rica. Definitely gotta
come out to Costa Rica, dude. But All right. Thanks, man.
Yeah, let's do it.